Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, these days, everybody in the world has a camera, and it's not a bad camera. It's usually right in their phone, and everybody takes pictures. A lot of them are bad. Some of them have that certain something, and that certain something is what we're talking about today with our guest here on this photography edition of Vox Pop, Michael Zide. His work has appeared everywhere from the New York Times and Boston Globe to the Santa Barbara Museum of Art and the State House in Boston. He's been an instructor at the Hallmark Institute of Photography and has taught or spoken on photography all over the region. And he's here to answer your questions about everything from taking a portrait to nature photography. And if you've had a chance to see any of Michael Zide's work, there is a compositional aspect to it that I find it transfixes you when you look at it. There are some pictures of everyday things that look absolutely otherworldly. And I think that there is a vision and an art to that. And maybe we can just scratch the surface of that today. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also comment on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Michael Zide, welcome to the show.
Ray, thank you so much for having me here.
You know, I think that's the one mic that is... Zach, that might not be your fault. Is that one... Yeah, let's take this mic. We'll just... This is called Radio Verite. There you go. I don't want to blind you with the heavy-duty LED lights we have in the studio. One mic sort of goes on
and
off.
How is this? Does this work?
That works.
Terrific.
And if you have to close your eyes, it's okay. Anyway, your work is phenomenal. I must say, you know, I don't see a lot of photography in my spare time because I don't have much spare time. But what you showed me was amazing. Now, you started on the West Coast.
I did.
And we were in the green room, and you talked about... sort of, you came from the West Coast mentality. Now, I know what that means in jazz. What does that mean in photography?
Well, going back to the very beginning, and I think my first inspiration, I grew up in Los Angeles, and you think of Los Angeles as a dry, warm destination place for many people, especially after last week. When I was 5 years old, I looked out the window at sunrise. I just happened to wake up, probably because it was so still. And it had snowed, and it's referred to as the first historic snowfall in Los Angeles history. It was totally gold. Golden that looked, to me, like pirate's gold, real gold. Not that it was snow that had a golden light on it. I had never seen snow before.
Right.
And from that day forward, there was a sense of wonder. There was that balance... a balance between being in this world but having one step in a world of wonder and fairy tale quality. And that morning, I think, influenced me a great deal and in some ways is a major reason that I ended up in a visual medium.
Okay, now you, of course, do your standard photographic jobs. You are a photographer, so you will photograph commercial shoots and everything else. But what really got me were these pictures of lakes and piers and beaches and the composition. It seems to me like all of these photographs that I have seen today are extremely well composed. And I wonder, serendipity, or is this something that every shot is well planned?
It's a great question. My specialty is black and white landscape photography.
Right.
What I'm after in the landscape is an emotional reaction to place. I'm after something that we refer to as gesture. It's not necessarily the essence of what the subject is, but you might think of it more as its personality. Trees have gesture. If you think about the words weeping willow, what does that bring to mind? It's a certain shape. It's branches hanging down. If it was a leaden sky behind that weeping willow, and perhaps it had just snowed and the branches were weighted down, you physically would probably have an emotional response as well as an intellectual response about the gesture of this tree, as opposed to perhaps backlit sunflowers in a field, you know, golden light streaming through these yellow petals, it's a very different emotional feeling. I have to say that the landscape to me is a place where I've come to learn more about myself. There's a saying, you learn to know yourself by the pictures you make. And I've learned a lot about who I am and what I respond to, what my concerns are, emotional concerns, things that bother me, things that are joyful, and I try to express them in my landscape images.
Well, you teach photography and you lecture on this, and it strikes me that what you just spoke about is something that cannot be taught. This comes from inside you.
That's a great insight. It's true. It can be pointed to indirectly almost, or pointed to inspirationally. What I tell my students is that I started off being totally ignorant of all art. I was going to be a doctor. That's what my father was. He was a physician. I thought that that's the line I would follow until I was about 22 years old. All of a sudden, some kind of life change came over me, and I picked up a book by a famous photographer who's a household name, Ansel Adams.
Right.
He wrote a series of technical books. And I'm not necessarily overly technical, but I was captivated by learning about something called the zone system. And looking at some of his images, he's not, I have to say, my favorite photographer, but I also saw pictures by people like Minor White. And one picture in color that really impressed me was by Elliot Porter, called Glen Canyon, The Place No One Knew. It's the first time I saw the use of color and the shapes of rock formations that I didn't know existed. And I was kind of taken in by things that were, that reached me very deeply.
So certain things, of course, can be taught, and there is the classical photographic technique.
I think what I tried to, when I do workshops, or I was just speaking at Hallmark, actually, the other day to the new students there, I was trying to say to them that from my perspective, it's taking one step after the other, and eventually you will get there if you maintain your passion, and you're critical enough to look at your work and not simply accept it without thinking about whether or not it is saying what you had hoped it would say. We call that intention.
Yeah.
You know, we all have this is what I would like to do with this picture as I'm composing it and as I'm looking through the camera. I'm trying to actually distance myself from the emotions that I'm feeling after I'm connected.
Why?
Well, because there's two parts to making a picture. One is having that connection, but then unless you look very literally, as they say, at what's within the four walls of your picture frame, and try to cut out all of the other things like the scent of the air, you know, the wafting breezes, the birds chirping, and all the wonderful emotional aspects of that moment, you've got to look very literally because you have to learn to see as the camera sees. The camera does not see emotionally. It sees in its own way. And it's a very special way of looking at the world.
This is an interesting point. Michael Zeid is our guest, and we talk photography. Now, the photographs you showed me, including one which was, I guess, a multiple exposure of the ocean, where the ocean almost has a fizzy quality.
Right.
It would seem to me that, okay, first you have the emotional attachment, you divorce yourself from the emotion when you're taking the shot. There's a lot of emotion in that picture when you look at the shot.
Thank you. You get emotion from a lot of things. One is obviously the subject matter, and is it a subject matter that you relate to? The tone of the picture. Obviously, a picture at twilight has a very different resonance with your emotions than a picture at high noon. You begin there, and the wonderful thing about photography is its plasticity. Once you make a picture, you've got all the information in its best potential form as you possibly can have it. You've captured it on a digital chip or on film, and it hasn't been run through the software. But the software can transform things to really match more of what has inspired you when you start working with the picture, not necessarily what you saw when you saw that subject, but what you develop over time by working with that subject on your computer screen or in the dark room.
Do you find, to some extent, digital manipulation cheating?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a lot of people have their own thoughts about that. I think in the final analysis, it's all about, does your picture work? Yeah. It's not, do you have emotion? Do you have an emotional connection to it, which is very helpful, obviously. But also, does the subject have an emotional connection to it? If you create that link for them, I think it's how you arrive there is not as consequential.
Very interesting. Michael Zeid is our guest. We talk photography on Vox Pop. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Back with your calls and more from Michael coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from The Whistling Kettle. 130 types of tea available online or at their Boston Spa and Troy locations. New 2016 teas now in stock. Tasting flights now available all day. TheWhistlingKettle.com. Interactive Media Consulting, Saratoga Springs, New York. Providing logo and print design, web development, and digital marketing throughout the capital region and beyond. Marketing creative and business ideas since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. And Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, AmherstCopy.com. Pine Cobble School, Williamstown, Massachusetts, where middle school age students learn to be team captains, school presidents, and mentors to the youngest learners. A good beginning never ends. PineCobble.org. And Spate Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls. More than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole and move it forward. DLSPECHT.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We talked photography today with Michael Zeid, and we were discussing sort of how to impart emotion, take away emotion while you're doing the actual photographing, and then the feelings that the photographs will elicit when you look at that. And you sent me notes, and I got to say, there are way more notes than this radio guy had a chance to look at, but one line I absolutely love, and I gather that this is one that you try to hammer home when you are lecturing on the subject. And here it is. It's about observation, openness, and connection. It's about reading the body language of the inanimate. Great line. Explain.
Well, if you're a portrait photographer and you're working with people, you obviously are very aware of their expression and their body language. And you may be manipulating that to get what meaning you want from the shot. In the landscape, obviously, you're dealing with rocks, trees, streams, clouds, weather of every kind. That's what you have as elements that create your mood. The first picture I ever took, and much later did I realize that it contained the word gesture for me and would have the meaning that has carried me through the next five decades of my work in this field, was a picture I took on Martha's Vineyard of Beetlebung Corner. I was struck by a few disturbing experiences as a child, as many of you probably were. One was flying monkeys and green witches in the World of Oz.
Yep, all right, I'm with you there. Yeah.
And the other one was Fantasia. But to give you a sense of what I'm talking about, the picture I took of Beetlebung Corner to me was so similar in terms of physical body language to Mickey Mouse, if you remember this part of Fantasia, as the Sorcerer's Apprentice. He's now willing the broomsticks with the buckets and pails of water to go clean the castle for him, right? The sorcerer is asleep. Mickey is taking on this power. This picture to me shows Mickey with his arms raised by one of the Beetlebung trees, which are strange enough in form anyway, but then reacting to him is a whole number of other Beetlebung trees who are recoiling backwards. Physically, they look to me as if they were recoiling. That's what I mean by gesture. It's connecting the inanimate with some childhood experience, probably, seeing, reading form in a way that is suggestive, you know, maybe metaphoric. Another example is something taken on a road called Moody Bridge Road, which I find really fun and interesting. Because as I was driving by, all of a sudden I saw that tree from The Wizard of Oz that was hurling apples at Dorothy. And what I had to do was solve the problem, and it took me about 8 attempts. Maybe that sounds as if I'm not as as good as I would like to think I am at times. But photography in many cases is like being a dog with a bone. And until you get it right, you're just trying to suck out that marrow any way you can. I'm a vegetarian, so I hated to use that.
Well, that's okay. But, in radio, I mean, Lord knows that we've been sucking for a long time.
But what I wanted to get to was this tree. I had to bring two location lights to the scene because it was in a bank of overgrown other trees, constantly in shade.
Yeah.
And I lit the arms of this tree, in quotes, arms, the gesture that I was trying to capture, with these two strobe location lights, which accentuated them. And so when you look at the picture of this tree, it either looks like an ant from another story, or it looks, you know, very similar to those apple trees that were so scary to me as a child.
Michael Zeid is our guest. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Barry, Bill, and Rick, hang in there. We'll get to your calls momentarily. At what age did you realize that you looked at things perhaps a little differently than... I think we all have that capability of looking at things in a childlike or in a different way, but a lot of us, it's squashed down by society and by everyday life. At what age did you tap into that?
It's another great question. I can't give you an age. I can tell you that once you travel this path and this journey, it's so much easier to know, obviously, where you've been when you've come to that end of that path. Wow. But if you look back at the connections between one picture to another, you note similarities. And what I noticed was I was generally taking pictures more of things that concerned me, things that I was trying to touch, but in a way that were not threatening, like issues of mortality, mm-hmm. Things like that. I found that I could talk about them visually and photographically and become more aware of them and how I feel about them, but in a non-threatening way. In answer to your question, I think that I noticed that a lot of my pictures contain weather, fog. Let's say that they were giant sunflowers, perhaps, that had come to the end of their cycle, that now looked as if they were approaching, you know, that going back to the ground, as opposed to, you know, sunflowers that are young, peppy, and vibrant. I'm much more concerned about the gesture of things that I'm concerned about, really. My worries are expressed in my photographs.
Our number to call here is 800-348-2551. Oftentimes, a composer, jazz composer, a classical composer, they'll do their piece, and it means something to them. It evokes feelings to the composer, and they may be surprised when somebody else who hears it says, "Wow, that really made me feel such and such a way." When someone looks at one of your photographs that means something, you know what it means to you. It means something completely different subjectively to that person. How do you feel about that?
That's really the beautiful part about this whole process. Showing your work to other people and having them tell you how they respond to it is really one of the high points to me.
So you don't feel like you failed if
No.
it means something completely different?
No. My job is to open up a door, let them see something of the world, hopefully in a new way or in a way that has meaning for them, but certainly not necessarily the way my private feeling doesn't have to be resonate with them, though sometimes it does.
Our number to call is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Bill in Milton. Bill.
Yeah, how are you today?
Good.
My question for Mike was, I have a 10th grader, and she's starting photography. She takes a class there every day. And I was wondering what else I can do to help her, get her more outside classes, better equipment.
You know what I think is important is if, is this a boy or a girl? Not that it matters.
A girl.
You know, it's a journey. It's, you want to be as encouraging as possible. You might want to show them the work or have them find the work of people whose work really resonates with them. And then try to talk about what is it about these pictures that you like so much, and then let your daughter go out and make more pictures. And in an encouraging way, saying, oh, I see that same element in the picture that you showed me before. It's something that you know, perhaps it's a color that they resonate with. Perhaps it's, you know, she likes warm colors as opposed to cold colors, or she likes puppies, cuddly things. There's a lot of wonderful books and picture books out there that have examples in the subject area that she may find appealing to her. But let her define for you, perhaps, if she has an area that she would like to take pictures of, and then encourage that pursuit. And all I can say is encouragement is the best advice I can give to any parent about someone's path in visual attainment.
Okay.
Thanks,
all right,
Bill.
Thank you.
We appreciate the call. You said to me before the show that everyone has 500,000 bad pictures in them.
Yeah,
and
the
trick
sure.
is to get them out quickly.
That's true. And the problem is that it's like an old car that where you might want to reset the odometer before you sell it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it resets on its own, and then you have another 500,000 bad pictures. The reason I got through a million bad pictures is because I love what I'm doing. You only do this for the length of time that I've done it, or that most of you out there with cameras do it, because you love doing it.
Yeah.
There's something, especially for people who can't draw, and that's, I'm pointing to myself. Ray is looking at me, stabbing my chest.
It's okay. I can't draw either.
This is something I would have no outlet for the arts had I not found photography.
All right. This one came in via email from Joe, who says, Fly Fisherman magazine ran a spread of Porter's work in Glen Canyon before it was flooded. Absolutely amazing photographs of a stunning earthscape. A shame that it's now underwater, and especially so as the dam isn't living up to expectations.
Oh, that's my sentiments exactly. That book inspired me to become a photographer. That was one of my main inspirations. And I totally understand the disappointment of the fact that it's now so far underwater and it will never probably be seen again. There are plenty of places like that with mystery and surprise, even in your own backyard. And that's the wonder of photography.
800-348-2551 is our number. And Mackenzie in Albany, you're on with Michael Zeit.
Hi, I have a question about metering.
Meter?
Yes.
Landscape. Pardon?
What kind of meter do you like to use? Or do you use one at this point?
What's the conic?
Do you use this as a handheld meter?
Right.
Go ahead.
I'm just curious about how you would meter a large landscape where there's a lot going on, a lot of contrast.
Explain to those of us who don't know what it is. What is metering?
Metering is the fact that the quality of the darkness, the dark areas and the light areas and the mid-tone areas of your subject, the quality of that is dependent upon your taking a proper exposure, letting just the right amount of light in to hit your digital chip or your film, if you're still shooting film. Here's my advice to you. Have you learned how to measure things with an incident reading?
With
that dome?
The dome over the sensor?
Yes. When
right.
you look, and you can Google this, but the beauty of incident meter readings is that it's a way of measuring the light that's falling on the subject, not the light that's reflected from the subject. And not to get, you know, too deep into the weeds here, but if you're making an exposure, and this is the old saw that I grew up with, and here was the question. If you're photographing snow in bright light, do you center the needle of your meter, or do you underexpose or overexpose? Do you know what the answer to that little ditty is?
No.
For proper,
Wait,
what's that? Go ahead.
Slightly underexposed?
Well, that's what most people would intuitively think, but you actually want to overexpose.
Why?
To place the amount of light that's reaching the sensor or the film to replicate, in photographic terms, the brightness of a white surface reflecting into the camera lens. If you use an incident meter, what I was getting at is you avoid having to worry about whether you're measuring light from a dark surface or a bright surface by reflective light. And it allows you in the landscape not to have to walk up to that mountain range that's, 3 miles in the distance, but you'll know what the light is like that's falling on it simply by measuring the light of the sun at that point in time by pointing your dome at the light source. If this sounds like it's a little complicated right now, I know it sounds perhaps a bit confusing. Go outside and make your exposures both ways. See how close they come to jibing with one another. And remember this, you can always bracket your exposures if you think that this picture could use bracketing. Underexpose, properly exposed, and overly exposed, and one of those is going to be just right.
Okay. Mackenzie, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Number to call here is 800-348-2551. We're joined by photographer Michael Zide and Tracy in Canajoharie. You're next.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure.
I can.
Okay. I was wondering what you shoot with and if you have any issues with people using their cell phones.
Oh, that's a great question. And Ray and I were talking about that earlier.
Yes.
Your cell phone, I have no idea. I assume you have a cell phone.
I do.
Okay. Your cell phone is probably so much, has a chip in it that is so much more sensitive to what it's photographing than my first Nikon digital camera.
Right.
And I wouldn't worry about chip size with your camera or the amount of detail you can capture in that cell phone. All I would worry about is how thoughtful you are when you're making pictures. It doesn't matter what camera you use. It's all about being critical about the pictures you're making. And I have to just delve into that slightly. People have different reasons for making pictures because they want to capture a memory. Which mm-hmm. I certainly did of my son and my wife and my animals, my dogs and cats. Or you're trying to, in quotes, create something that has a little more layers of emotional interest for yourself, which is the artistic approach.
Yeah,
you can certainly try to do both. Just be critical of your work and try to make the next picture embody what you think this picture lacked. And all I can say, my best advice is, find a photographer whose work you adore and compare that, whatever they, man or woman that they're doing, to the work that you're doing, if it's in the same vein, and try to see what that difference might be, and you'll learn a tremendous amount about how you can rapidly improve your work.
Okay. What do you shoot with?
You're back to that. Okay. I started off with a 4x5 camera, which is a sheet film camera, big, a lot of resolution. I now shoot with the brand isn't important. It's a 30 megapixel chip.
Okay.
So that's a good size.
Yeah.
And it's 35. It's a DSLR, which I have to say makes me a lot more spontaneous, allows me to take many more pictures, not necessarily that all work, but it allows me to vary what I'm photographing and how free I feel about taking pictures without having to lift a heavy tripod, shift my weight, put a dark cloth over my head, and focus again. It's a much more liberating way of approaching
it. And cheaper, I imagine.
The camera isn't cheap.
Right.
But, now that we're in a digital world, we don't have the expenses of film. It's wonderful. Just beware that pictures that I took 15 years in the past, I've come to love. I did not have the ability to see what magic, in quotes, they held for me until I was ready to see it 15 years later. Do not be overly deleteful.
Ah.
It's better to have memory and download into a computer and store your work until you're ready to really accept what may be, a pearl in an oyster, in quotes, that you just weren't ready to shuck. And I hate to, again, as I said to Ray before, I'm a vegetarian. I hate that image, but that's
shuck corn, right?
We shuck corn too. That's true.
Tracy, thanks for the call.
Can I ask one more question?
Very quickly, sure.
Okay. Okay. So you use what you use, but how do you print? Are you going to a professional printer, or are you printing?
That's a good question.
From, you know, like the new printers that they have out now.
Well, my work is sponsored by Moab Fine Art Printing Paper. They're some of the best paper out on the market. I have no end of, lucky for me, no end to the amount of printing paper that I have access to. What costs me a lot of money is ink for my printer.
So you print your own?
I do print my own. The importance of printing your own is you get not only immediate gratification, but you get to see where you have let yourself down and how you have to go back perhaps to Photoshop or whatever your software is and tweak it.
Yeah.
Because what you see on your computer screen and what you see as a print, sometimes it's very hard to correlate those two. And unless you've done that painstakingly, you're going to be very disappointed in the results of what you thought was a magnificent image as you see it in print. But it doesn't mean the picture isn't magnificent.
Michael Zeid is our guest. We'll take a break here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. The home stretch, straight ahead.
Support for WAMC comes from ClipCentric Albany, a local video services division of ClipCentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.ClipCentric.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5, HydeCollection.org. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly, passive, and solar design elements, noble-home.net. And Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, using food scraps and yard waste to create nutrient-rich compost to help conserve water and control weeds. Compost available for purchase, ucrra.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by photographer Michael Zeid. When did you make the switch from print, from film to digital?
Probably in the, it's been at least 12 years, I would think.
Hmm.
It's hard to remember the day. I remember I went kicking and screaming into that.
I bet.
It's so much to learn, especially if you're an older person.
Right.
I think younger generations are so in tune with the software that we have to use. I was teaching at Hallmark Institute of Photography. We have some of the finest teachers in the country, but I didn't have time to sit into all the lectures on Photoshop and Lightroom that my friends were teaching. So I had my own responsibilities. I wish I had just said I would rather pay the tuition and go here than teach here because it's so important to learn the software. It's part of the craft that you have to get under your belt. Like in the old days, we had to really learn how to print in a wet, dark room. The interpretation you bring to your picture is so much a part of the craft.
Well, from a practical standpoint, and we touched on this before, when you're shooting with film, film ain't cheap, and so it limits your chances. In other words, you would have to really set one up. Say, well, I've got three or four tries at this.
Yeah.
Now with digital, the sky is the limit. How many do you? Okay, well, here's my question.
Yeah.
You talked about keepers. So when you have the shot and you have the print and it is like those that you were showing me, do you get rid of all the ones that, gosh, this is just a little off? Do you get rid of all the not keepers?
It's the question. We all have to keep asking ourselves, and probably what we do is we just buy more storage space on a hard drive.
Because, no, but as an artist.
Well, no, as an artist, I know which ones I like, but sometimes over time I make changes. I want the luxury of having those backups in case I really wasn't aware of what I wasn't aware of, so to speak.
Okay. So revisionism then.
Revisionism.
From yes. your philosophical standpoint,
yes.
revisionism is okay.
Absolutely.
Sometimes a great album, let's say a great rock album, 25 years later, those still living will say, well, we've mixed it. We've added a few extra things. Always drives me crazy. I like to have the definitive one.
Well, you know what's happened in the world of fine art? Prints that were part of the silver gelatin process are much more highly valued than prints that are done digitally, which is unfortunate. It's the same skill of the artist. It's the same interpretation of the artist. But there's this fallacy in the marketplace that you can... You can crank out a number of prints on your digital printer, one after another, and say, here's the edition, and then number it 1 to 10 and try to sell it. But what you generally find yourself doing is you find that given a little bit of time, because I never try to sell something that I haven't lived with for a while, you realize that you want to change it somewhat.
But is that okay, changing
Absolutely.
Something that you have a landscape that you have taken and you say, well, this is encapsulates what I'm looking for. Then 20 years later, I got to add something. That, to me, that's almost wrecking the pure.
Well, you know, if you become a collector of Ansel Adams' most famous picture, Moonrise over Hernandez,
yeah.
the pictures that are the most expensive to purchase are the ones he did at the very beginning that look nothing like the finished pictures that he sold years later. He has darkened certain areas and brought in mood and tone to the sky, which is our job. We create mood. We create this emotional relationship to the image, but that changes for us. We see the same picture anew, and I think we have the right of changing it.
All right. Well, let's not make this like a 60 Minutes. You're the artist. I'm the radio man. Michael Zeit is our guest. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Jim in Albany. Jim, you're on.
Hi. I'm taking black and white photographs with a digital camera. And in the process of printing them out, I'm trying to get a full grayscale. And I was wondering, there are printers out there that sell not just black cartridges, but also black and gray cartridges. And how important do you think that gray cartridge is?
It's probably subtly important. I mean, all these things add to the finished look of your image. What's really important initially, obviously, is making the proper exposure. And when you take, because all digital begins as a color image, and then we have to transform it into black and white. And I assume we're talking about a digital image?
Yes.
Okay. Because you can scan, you know, old negatives and make them into digital images. But you really have to, part of the skill is in how you interpret your original scene and the software that you're using to bring out your grayscales, whether it's in Photoshop or in Topaz or in all of these other software mediums. That's as much or more important than simply having that one extra shade of gray in your printer.
How many shades of gray are there? 49, 50?
It was a movie, and
I didn't see it. Never mind.
But it all adds up, and that's as the most important thing I can say is that every step along the way adds to the finished look. And so I would try to be as careful as I could to embody all the potential you possibly can. If that makes sense to you,
yes.
I hope that kind of explains it.
It explains it.
It's a good question. Thank you.
Jim, thank you for the call. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Michael Zeit is our guest. You ever get what is akin to writer's block, a dry spell?
It's an interesting question. I've been there many times.
Yeah.
It's the pleasure of a dry spell only comes after it ends, but it renews your faith that this journey is really worth it, because we were talking about how many keepers, in quotes, you get compared to how many pictures just don't quite make
yeah.
it. There's a quote, and I can't say it verbatim, but it's about you can see across the gulf. But you basically can't see totally across the gulf between you and that finished image. There's a magic about art It's very hard to foretell and be sure that what you take, when you take it, is going to be a picture that actually has ultimate worth to you. There's so many times I've been out there making pictures, and it's the ones that I don't even remember having taken that are the ones that resonate most closely with me and that I choose to put in my portfolio. The first picture I put in my portfolio, which is the same portfolio, you can look online and see it now. If you look on my Martha's Vineyard portfolio, there's this one with, it's a horizontal of an ocean scene and a black cloud, which was really moving in at the speed of sound, it seemed like. It was almost over me before I could get my 4x5 out and put the film sheet in. But it's the first picture I ever kept because I thought it was, you know when you've made it that it's, or let me say, you most often know that it's a keeper for life. It has risen to a certain understanding with you that this is really working. This really says what you want it to say. And it took me years of work on Martha's Vineyard before I took the first photograph that really meant something to me and that I still show in my portfolio.
You know, that's very interesting, though. You make a point that 20 years down the line, you may see a picture that maybe was in your dry spell. And the key would, of course, be to just keep working. And you say, you know what? There's something to this.
You've got to keep trying to be inspired. When I have dry spells, I like to look at the work of other photographers, and I think all photographers do that. You know, the saying is we stand on the shoulders of the masters who came before us. None of our photographs are probably original. We've all been influenced by either the movies we've seen and the lighting effects. You know, if you've ever seen film noir, a lot of my pictures, in a sense, embody film noir because I love the moodiness for the gesture that's in the picture. It's underexposed, it's deep and dark, and usually there's fog, just like those old movies.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many things have influenced all of us in our picture making. And I don't think it's, as we all like to say, it's not plagiarism, it's an homage.
Yeah.
And I think it is. We can't copy. All we can do is hopefully learn from other people.
Well, okay, you make a point, and you suggested this to one of our callers earlier, to study and find a photographer that you really speaks to you.
Yes.
And try to take pictures in that vein. Then isn't that, in a way, not developing your own personal outlook on things?
Well, what I think happens is, as I said, I began in blissful ignorance. It took me a long time to understand what I was looking for and what a good photograph looked like. And that takes a while to really understand that. And it's only by doing that you come to that realization. What I found was the pictures of certain people like Minor White, like some work of Elliot Porter, and other people, Wynne Bullock, all these people that go back a few generations along with me, I learned a lot from them, but then by doing my own work, I created my own sensibility.
Yeah.
Because I was reacting to things that were connecting me and my emotions with the landscape, not Wynne Bullock's, not Minor White's. There may be parallels and similarities in the fact that we like moving water and long exposures, but what I choose to photograph may try to embody mystery and surprise, but it wouldn't necessarily be the same photograph that those people who I really respected would embody.
Are there any painters who inspired you as a photographer?
Well, there are a number of them. Turner is one that I just adore. I mean, Turner's ethereal quality of light and how atmospheric his skies were. I've only achieved in a couple of pictures, and generally those pictures were of things that were precursors to a tornado that almost seemed as if they were coming not towards me, but coming for me. And most of the time, I think a lot of what I'm leaning towards now a little bit is night photography and long exposures with clouds. And you get a mix of atmospherics that you just find part of another way of seeing yourself in the landscape.
Michael Zeid is our guest. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Richard in Greenfield. Richard, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I've just been doing digital for about 6 or 7 years now. And for exposures, I shoot on a RAW. I shoot RAW to get as much information as I can. And I notice no matter what I do sometimes, and I set my meter on manual. And when I take a picture, if I either overexpose or underexpose and preview it, the image I get, sometimes the camera seems to want to correct it for me. Is that true, or is it?
Well, what you see in your preview is a JPEG image, which it has added contrast, and perhaps the colors are just a little more vibrant. You can't trust your preview. You certainly can't trust it with your life. Not if you're hoping to be a professional photographer. One thing to learn how to read is your histogram. Have you gotten into histograms yet? So you just don't want to have things that are spiking up into the pure white or are spiking up into the pure black. And what I find, if you're having trouble with your exposures, a young lady called earlier and I suggested that she take incident light meter readings of the source of light as opposed to the light reflected from the subject. One thing you could do if you wanted to is buy a gray card. And let the light. Okay, then if you take your meter readings from your gray card and then you look at your histogram, that's as close to a proper exposure as a reflected sensor meter reading can give you. And always bracket if you have the possibility. Sometimes there's malfunctions, you know, and you want to ensure every possibility for success you can.
Richard, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to another Richard, this one in Hillsdale. Richard, you're on with Michael Zeid.
Okay, yeah. Hey, I'm looking at his website, and I'm enjoying looking at his photographs.
Oh,
I think they're wonderful.
Thank you.
My question is whether or not you're using some kind of computer interpolation whereas, you know, you can change your exposure to match, like, Tri-X or you know, an older film or whatever, or if you're just going straight and doing your own manipulations within Photoshop.
All right, good question. Only about a minute left.
Okay. One of my friends, and I do some teaching with him, Jim Roselli, is an expert on all of this. He is a geek in this department, with all things technical. I'm not. I take an image. And until recently, I never even bothered sharpening it. But sharpening is almost essential because it really makes your images pop from the raw state. All I can say is I do as little manipulation through the software as I have to make an interpretation as opposed to a description of what was in front of the camera. I want to, you know, put my own feeling and response to whatever my subject brought out in me into the picture if I can. But it's as simple, it's as straight a path as I can possibly follow.
Right. So you're not using any of these interpolated?
No, I never have.
I tried it once. I didn't like it.
Okay.
Richard, thanks a lot for the call.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that'll have to be the last call. Well, Michael Zeid, a great pleasure meeting you. That was fun.
Well, Ray, I have to say it's a great... great pleasure meeting you. I thank you for having me up as a guest.
You know, you seem to enjoy talking about photography almost as much as you enjoy taking photographs.
Absolutely.
Well done, sir. We appreciate you being here. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from Northeast Solar in Hatfield, Massachusetts, helping Pioneer Valley residents live more sustainably with solar power for home, business, or farm. Keep solar local, northeast-solar.com. Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant at Raw Bar, realseafoodco.com. Union College Concert Series, presenting the Dover String Quartet with clarinetist Anthony McGill. The quartet joins the New York Philharmonic Principal for Brahms Clarinet Quintet, Sunday, February 28th, 3 p.m., unioncollegeconcerts.org. And the Department of Theater Arts, SUNY New Paltz, presenting the Arthur Miller drama A View from the Bridge, March 3rd through 13th, newpaltz.edu/theater. Thanks again for joining us. Thanks to Michael Zide. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Bruce Herbach. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned now for news.